pushing hard with the compulsion. Why?
Too many obstacles, she said, pale and trembling.
Tell me everything, I ordered. She remained obstinate, and I was ready to compel her even more. One tidal wave of spirit, and I was certain I could have her on her hands and knees, begging to tell me all she knew.
Do it, ordered Aunt Tatiana. Make her pay. Make her your slave.
I was ready to, but then, unexpectedly, an image of last night's dream meeting with Sonia came back to me. Or, more specifically, an image of Nina in her cell came back to me. I recalled Sonia's words about the scars of spirit use, and remembered my promise to Sydney to keep things in check.
Sydney couldn't have foreseen this, Aunt Tatiana argued. You're stronger than Nina. You won't end up like her.
No, I told that phantom voice. I won't risk it. I'll keep my word to Sydney. With great reluctance, I released the compulsion and spirit directed against Alicia. She slumped, this time simply from mental exhaustion. That's enough for us to go on, I said. We can find this place in St. George. Whether it would be through Sydney's sleuthing, the alchemists giving in and helping, or even Sabrina's insight, it couldn't be that difficult now that we had a city. I would have liked to know more about the obstacles in place, but I wasn't going to burn myself out when she probably just meant crazy warriors and their weapons. The Guardians could handle that. They had before.
Do you need anything else from her before we freeze her up again? Asked Maud.
Alicia's eyes went wide.
You said I wouldn't be frozen if I cooperated!
That wasn't exactly cooperating, replied Maud coolly. I shook my head. That should be enough. If we need more, I'll let you know.
No!
Shouted Alicia. Fireballs formed in her hands, and she began futilely hurling them at the invisible barrier.
I won't go into that state again! I won't! You can't!
But Maud was casting beside me, and a minute later, Alicia was frozen in place again, her fireball-hurling stance even more ridiculous than her last one. The witches disbanded the circle, and Jackie came over to speak to me.
Are you sure you got everything you needed from her? I felt you wanted to ask her more.
I did, I admitted. But her defenses were strong. I'll pass the St. George information to my contacts and see what they can find out. Jackie nodded.
Very well, then. I also spoke to Maud. If you'd like, you're welcome to stay here at her house until the next move in this plan. It'll put you a little closer to the action, and from what I hear, she has a lot more room than the last place you were staying.
Hopefully more produce, too, I added. I glanced at Neil. You're the security expert. Is it safe?
I believe so, he said after a moment's thought. No one followed any of us. And if it's fine with her, I'll stay on too to look after you.
We thanked Maud for her hospitality and stayed out of the way as the witches wrapped things up. Apparently, Alicia would eventually be transported to a magical trial in prison, but for now she'd remain in the wine cellar slash dungeon. Neil and I, thankfully, had guest rooms upstairs. I sent the St. George info to Marcus, and then finally decided it was time to break some hard news, since it looked like Neil and I would be waiting around together for a while. Neil, I began, when we were alone in his room. We need to talk.
Sure, he said easily. Is it about Jill?
Nothing at all to do with her, actually. I gestured to the bed. Maybe you should sit down. Neil frowned, alerted by my tone.
I'll stand, thanks. Just tell me what's happening.
I crossed my arms, as though I could protect myself from all the anguish I was about to dredge up. Until then, I didn't realize how I'd been fighting to keep it from crushing me. Neil, there's no easy way to say this. And I'm so sorry to be the one telling you. But Olive died 2 nights ago. Neil made no sound at all, but his face went white. So white I thought he might pass out.
No,
he said at last, after several long moments of agonized silence.
No. That's impossible.
He shook his head adamantly.
No!
A Strigoi killed her, I said. Whereas I'd initially struggled to find words, I now suddenly found myself rushing forward, unable to stop.
She was staying in a Dampier commune in Michigan. A small group of Strigoi attacked it, breaking through the wards somehow. We think they got a human to pull one of the warding stakes up. Regardless, they got in, and Olive was caught when she was running away, and...
Wait, interrupted Neil. In the blink of an eye, his stricken face had turned hard and skeptical.
Olive wouldn't run away from a fight. Certainly not from a group of Strigoi. She, of all people, would stand her ground.
That terrible agony ripped through me. She was running away to protect her baby. Declan. The baby my mom is taking care of. Another heavy silence filled the room as the weight of those words sunk in. I wished then that I'd waited for Sydney. She would have done a more eloquent job explaining this.
And it wasn't even the Strigoi she was running from, I said, when Neil only continued to stare at me in shock.
Neil, the baby, Declan, he's yours, your son. You're the father.
Disbelief returned to Neil's features, but this time it was more stunned than angry.
We both know that's not true, he said.
Was that why she ran? Did she think I'd judge her? We had no real commitments, not truly. I was crazy about her, it's true, but there was just...
The one time. I know. I finished. But that's all it took. Somehow, something happened to her when she was restored from being a Strigoi that let her conceive a baby with you. I didn't believe it either until I looked at him more closely with my magic. There's definitely a spiritual, I don't know, residue on him.
It's crazy, I know.
But he is yours.
Neil sat on the bed, so still he could have been a statue. I understood his grief and sat beside him.
Neil, I'm so sorry.
Olive's dead, he said numbly. He looked up at me and blinked back tears.
If what you're saying is true, if somehow through some sort of magic, that baby is mine, then why didn't Olive tell me herself? Why'd she run away?
Because she was afraid of that magic, I said. And she was afraid of what people would say or do, both the Moroi and the alchemists. She hid him to protect him from being treated like a freak of nature, and I promised to help protect him.
Neil stared blankly for several moments, and then I think hearing about protection woke up his better instincts.
Who knows? Who knows about Declan?
About his true nature? I gestured to myself. Only me and Sydney. Rose and Dimitri know he's Olive's, as do a couple of people back at the commune. That's it. We thought it was safest that as few people know about him as possible. If they knew that somehow, probably through Olive being restored, Dampiers could have kids, well, it'd shock a lot of people. Some would be happy, some curious. They'd all want to learn more about him, and that's not what Olive wanted.
Neil remained silent, and nearly as motionless as Alicia had been.
Neil? I said, a little unnerved by his shell-shocked state.
It's going to be okay. I'll help you. We'll make sure Olive's wishes are honored, that Declan lives a happy, normal life. Once this business with Jill is over, we'll get you and Declan together and...
No, said Neil, suddenly coming to life. He looked up at me sharply, and though his expression was hard, there was a terrible sadness in his voice.
I can't ever see him again.
Chapter 17. Sydney. The warrior's compound was quiet and still as I crept through the night. Trey and Sabrina had said the warriors could have wild parties when they wanted, but when curfews and discipline were laid down, everyone obeyed. That was certainly the case now. Most people were tucked away in their dorms, and the people who passed me as I crept invisibly toward the master's headquarters were those on patrol. None of them seemed to expect much to happen overnight, and they made their rounds with relaxed confidence. Another open window allowed me to slip inside the master's building easily, right in front of a guard assigned to watch at the front door. Inside, I found mostly quiet and empty rooms, and like in my building, most of the doorways were open. There were, of course, a few rooms with real doors, and as luck would have it, it was in one of those that the masters chose to have a meeting. At least that's what I assumed was going on. Two guards were posted in front of a closed door, and I could hear muffled voices behind it. Noting its position, I went back outside and circled around to it, hoping I'd find its window open to allow me to climb in and spy. When I reached it, I found it only partway open, enough to let in air in the hot night, but not enough for me to climb through. Sabrina had said one of the masters usually carried pertinent information about their organization at all times, sometimes in hard copy, or sometimes on a laptop, depending who it was and how tech-savvy he was. My plan had been to rifle through said information in the hopes of finding where Jill might be held. For now, I'd have to start with eavesdropping. As it turned out, I'd arrived just in time for the beginning of their meeting, which I initially thought was a stroke of luck. It meant I hadn't missed anything. Unfortunately, it meant I had to endure a lot of preliminary material, including more of those absurd psalms. Then someone got sidetracked and started asking about baseball scores. All the while, I was conscious of my invisibility. It was long-lasting, but not that long-lasting, and it was a relief when the group finally started talking about the business of the day.
"All in all, it was a strong showing,"
a voice I recognized as Master Angeletti's said.
"We had a good turnout, and they put on a commendable show."
"Some were a little out of line,"
a sullen voice grumbled. I knew that one, too. Chris Juarez. Master Angeletti laughed.
"Still put out that that girl tricked you? I say more power to her. We need more thinkers around here."
"Not too many."
That was Master Ortega.
"No, no, of course not,"
said Master Angeletti.
"But if we're going to be dealing with the alchemists more, we need to be able to outsmart them."
My ears pricked at that. The alchemists? I'd once done some reconnaissance for Marcus and discovered that there were indeed alchemists and warriors working together. But Marcus had yet to learn the full extent of how deep that relationship went.
"We've already outsmarted them," said Master Ortega. "We've gotten them to do business with us."
"Yes, but don't get too comfortable with that arrangement,"
said a new voice that must have been one of the council members.
"Didn't you say you got a call about that girl, Alfred?"
"Yes, yes,"
said Master Angeletti, not sounding particularly concerned.
"But it was just preliminary. One of them claimed they'd gotten a tip we might be holding her, but I think they were just covering their bases. I checked with the guards, though, and they said there was no sign that anyone had been snooping around or was coming for her. I'll keep logging everything here, though, just so we've got a trail if anything happens."
I didn't know what he meant until I heard the click of fingers typing on keys. I tensed, waiting for them to elaborate about that girl, but they switched topics, moving on to more about the trials. Nonetheless, excitement surged through me. Sabrina had been right. There was a computer or laptop in there that Master Angeletti was apparently keeping records on. Was there other information about that girl recorded? I didn't know for sure if they were referring to Jill, but it was promising, as was the laptop's existence. I needed to make obtaining it my goal. That wasn't going to be easy, seeing as how I had no idea how long this meeting was going to last, or if Master Angeletti would leave his laptop behind when it ended. I was mentally listing all the possible distractions I might cause when the alchemists came up in conversation again, in a way I totally didn't expect.
"Well, just be careful,"
Master Ortega was saying in response to someone else.
"Don't screw up this deal with the alchemists. If your contact can really deliver on what he's offering, we won't have to focus so much on the candidate's physical prowess. We can make our recruits as strong as we like."
"I still don't like it,"
muttered another unknown council member.
"We're dabbling in unholy substances."
"Not if we purify those substances first,"
said Master Angeletti.
"And use the strength they give us to fight back against the evil."
I frowned as I tried to determine what they might be referring to.
I've seen what these substances can do, remarked Chris. I saw them when they were used at my cousin's school. If the alchemists really do have more of them, they're letting them go to waste if they aren't using them in the fight against evil.
The alchemists fight evil by cataloging it, chuckled someone.
Don't make those kinds of comments around our contact, warned Master Ortega. He's already hesitant about doing business with us. His people won't like it if they find out what he's doing.
I know what I'm doing,
snapped Master Angeletti.
And believe me, I'm paying him enough to get over any hesitancy he might have.
The conversation drifted back toward a discussion of the recruits, analyzing each of us according to what the warriors saw as our pros and cons. I only half listened, my mind spinning with the other shocking piece of news I'd heard. Based on what Chris had said, it sounded as though they were talking about using vampire blood to create performance-enhancing tattoos on humans. A surge of those had occurred at Amberwood Prep, resulting in both athletic and academic prowess. The problem was, the results of those tattoos were unpredictable and often had illicit side effects. The ring had been shut down when I'd helped uncover its mastermind, Keith Darnell. He'd been sent off to re-education, reprogrammed, and now towed the line with nearly robotic loyalty. Or did he? The warriors had kept referring to he as their contact. I'd known of no other alchemist participating in such activity. Was it possible Keith had broken free of some of that programming? Was he now making a secret deal with these psychopaths, one that would give their fighters superhuman strength? Again, I heard those clicking keys, driving home the importance of getting a look at what was on that laptop. I considered a few options that might allow me a chance to peek at it, but I soon rejected those. The warriors might act like they were from the Middle Ages, but it was very likely Master Angeletti locked his laptop when he left it. I might need technical assistance to view it. That and I really wanted more than just a peek. If he logged notes on all their meetings, kept track of important calls and transactions, well, the possibilities for what that laptop could hold were endless. Rescuing Jill was my main priority, but I might very well walk out of this with information that could show us a whole lot more. Abandoning the master's meeting, I used more invisibility magic to break into other dorms and smuggle out Sabrina and Eddie. Neither was asleep when I found them, and we managed to find a secluded spot behind a storage shed to talk. You were right, I told Sabrina. Master Angeletti does log his information on a laptop, and I heard what sounded very much like a suspicious reference to them holding Jill. Eddie perked up.
Then what are we waiting for? Let's go take it.
Actually, that's kind of what I had in mind, I said. I mean, maybe there are more delicate ways to go about this, but do we have that kind of time? We've lost so much with Jill. I turned to Sabrina. Marcus hinted that you were prepared for if your cover was ever blown. Is that true? She arched an eyebrow. You plan on blowing it? Not if I can help it, I said. But the end result of all this is going to be the laptop gone and Eddie and me never finishing the recruitment. If they link us to the theft, they'll link us to you. You could be in trouble.
Understood, she said.
If I leave this gig with a prize like his laptop, it'll be worth it. I just worry about them coming after you, I said. Sabrina remained unfazed. Don't worry about me. These guys aren't as connected as the alchemists, and I know how to avoid them. Now what's your plan? Kind of simple, really, I admitted. Create a big distraction. Steal the laptop in the chaos. She looked a little disappointed, probably because she'd been expecting something more sophisticated and stealthy. And really, if I'd had the time to concoct a more elegant plan, I would have. Eddie, meanwhile, had no problem with my idea. It was straightforward, which he liked.
Fire?
He suggested. I considered it, but with as close as these buildings are... I gestured around at how tightly packed in everything on the compound was. Well, I don't like these guys, but I don't want to kill all of them if a fire gets out of hand. So, believe it or not, I'm going to take a page out of Alicia's book. Spellbook, if you want to get technical.
Alicia probably would burn this place down around them,
he pointed out. Probably, but she does have less violent methods. While I was waiting around in Palm Springs, I looked up some of the spells she used on us. Most were pretty advanced, but I think I could pull off the Fotianas.
The what?
Asked Sabrina.
Think of them as annoying mutant fireflies,
Eddie told her. I nodded in agreement. I feel like a swarm of them would be a pretty good distraction, enough to get the Masters out of their meeting. Then I can grab the laptop, and we can all run out of here in the chaos. Sabrina, do you think you'll be able to get out and get your car ready?
Sure. The gate guards won't stop me, and if there's a big enough uproar, I can claim I'm getting weapons for my car and that Eddie's helping me.
Seeing our surprised looks, she rolled her eyes.
Come on. You don't think everyone here has weapons stashed in their car?
The question then came down to whether I could pull off Alicia's spell. I'd committed the spell to memory after reading about it, but magic was a lot more than just memorization. Summoning supernatural creatures wasn't an easy task, especially with no physical spell components to aid me. I spoke the words, concentrating on the power within me, and felt the magic flare up in response. The spell I'd read about had an element of control to it, a way for the caster to direct the Fotianas to do the caster's bidding. I'd planned on having the Fotianas do some steady loops of the compound, enough to be distracting and steer everyone's attention from the Master's meeting room, but not to generate into complete chaos. Unfortunately, things didn't quite work out as I'd planned. It took a lot more strength and energy than I'd expected to cast the spell, and although I pulled it off, barely, I couldn't actually maintain control. A swarm of Fotianas materialized in front of me, hovering there for a moment before suddenly scattering off and flying around the compound at insane speeds and in wildly different directions. We stared after them, gaping.
Were they that fast at the robot museum?
Asked Eddie, eyes wide. I don't think so, I said. I may not have cast it perfectly. I also didn't mean to summon quite so many. If we'd wanted chaos, though, we got it. The Fotianas instantly attracted attention, spinning and twirling around the compound, leaving trails of light behind. And just like at the museum, the Fotianas stung those they came into contact with. Screams and shouts rose up almost immediately, and with them, a cry I hadn't expected.
Armageddon! Armageddon is upon us! Warriors, take up arms!
Sabrina gasped, and I turned to her in surprise. They mean that figuratively, right? I asked. She shook her head frantically.
Are you kidding? These people? It's what they've been preparing for. I didn't think they'd take this as a sign, though.
Look!
Eddie pointed toward a group of warriors hurrying in our direction. Panic surged into me. How had they linked the Fotianas to us?
The storage shed, explained Sabrina, steering us away from it. That's what they're going for. They do Armageddon drills to get ready for this, and the weapons they use are in here.
Sure enough, the mob of warriors paid us no attention and huddled around the shed as they waited for it to be unlocked. As soon as that happened, someone began passing out swords and maces to the waiting throng. Once armed, they tore off back into the compound center, swinging madly against the Fotianas, which they'd termed Demons of Hell.
Well, I said, having to shout amid all the noise. They're certainly distracted. Can you guys have the car ready while I go for the laptop?
Sabrina nodded, but Eddie said to me,
Let me come with you.
Easier for me to slip in and out alone, I replied.
Sydney?
Eddie, I said firmly. I can handle this. You have to trust me. Go with Sabrina and be ready to speed away as soon as I get through the gates.
I thought he might still protest, but at last, he yielded. The two of them took off for the gate, and I ran back to the Master's meeting room, having to dodge frenzied armed warriors and Fotianas along the way. Fortunately, things were so chaotic that no one paid any attention to one lone recruit. They probably thought I was lost and confused. In fact, the odds might be good that they'd assume our disappearance was out of fear and never link Sabrina and us to the missing laptop. As I'd hoped, the Masters had run out of their meeting when the commotion started. I got into the empty room easily and nearly whooped with joy when I saw the laptop sitting out. As I'd suspected, the screen was locked, but that'd be a problem for later. I picked it up and turned to the door, where I nearly ran right into Master Angeletti. He stood there stunned for a moment, his eyes going from my face to the laptop and then back to me.
"What do you think you're doing?"
he sputtered out, blocking the exit. So much for not implicating ourselves in the laptop's theft. I deliberated for only a moment. If my cover was already blown, I might as well go all the way. Summoning back Malachi Wolf's training, I wound up and punched Master Angeletti, landing a hit he clearly hadn't expected. I'd totally forgotten about the strength spell the witches had laid on me. With the extra power behind my punch, he went flying back several feet, landing flat on his back. Groaning, he put a hand to his head, but didn't come after me as I sprinted over him and hurried back out through the compound. No one stopped me as I headed toward the main gate. The warriors were too busy swinging their weapons at the Fotianas, shouting about the last battle and sending their enemies to hell. The gate guards had abandoned their posts to join the fray, and I slipped out easily, happy to find Sabrina's car running and ready for me. I tumbled into the back seat, and she had her foot on the gas before I could even manage to shut the door. "You got it?" she asked once we were speeding away. "Got it," I confirmed, fastening my seatbelt. "But it, wasn't as covert as I hoped. You might want to go with that staying away from them plan after all." She snorted. "No problem there, especially if that laptop pays off." I hugged it to me. "Let's hope so. Where are we going to take it?" "To Marcus, of course." Marcus was still staying at Howie's cabin in the desert, and it was nearly sunrise when we reached it hours later. I was hoping Adrian would still be there, but when we walked into the living room, we found only Marcus on the couch, eating an oatmeal cream pie for breakfast and leafing through a copy of Reader's Digest.
"I think he's staying with those witches of yours," he explained, immediately handing over my cell phone. I, in turn, gave him the laptop. "Know anyone who can get into it?" Marcus grinned.
"Our host, actually."
I stared stupidly for a moment. "Howie?"
"Yep. Believe it or not, he used to work in computers before retiring to the herb business. I'll give it to him right away."
Marcus disappeared through the beaded curtain. I promptly dialed Adrian, and it went to voicemail. It was hard to say what schedule he might be on, and if it was anything human, he might very well still be asleep. Stifling a yawn, I decided that didn't seem like too bad of an idea after my all-night venture. Eddie and Sabrina were on the same page, and Marcus assured us he'd make sure no one bothered us while we camped out in the living room. I fell asleep almost instantly, and woke a few hours later to the sound of Eddie and Marcus whispering. Sabrina was still asleep, curled up on the beanbag chair.
"What's up?"
I asked quietly, walking over to join Marcus and Eddie.
"Howie got in pretty easily," said Marcus. "Master Angeletti wasn't that big on security. I spent the last hour or so perusing some of the files."
"Did you find anything about where they're holding Jill?" I asked eagerly. Marcus nodded.
"That's what I was just telling Eddie. It's all here. Well, almost. They mention her, talk about how long she's been held, have schematics for the place they're holding her. There are even specifics on the terms they negotiated with Alicia."
"Terms?" I asked.
"Apparently, they cut some sort of deal. Alicia wanted her held a while, probably so that she had a bargaining chip with you. But the warriors eventually want to use her in some sort of barbaric execution ritual."
My heart stopped. "Just like they did with Sonya."
"It would seem so," said Marcus grimly. "Per the deal they struck with Alicia, they only have to hold her for 3 more days."
I had to stop my jaw from dropping. 3 days?
We have to get there now,
said Eddie, his face like a thundercloud. I was inclined to agree. Marcus shot him a look of sympathy.
That's the thing. Remember I said we almost had all the info on her? The one thing we don't have is the location of where they're holding her. They refer to it as their Judgment Day complex.
I would have laughed if the situation wasn't so dire. Stupid name, but it might be enough for the alchemists to go on. I'll talk to them myself this time and see if I can get their attention.
Oh,
remarked Marcus. There was a dry smile on his face I couldn't fully interpret.
I've got something that might help with that. Did you know the warriors are buying enchanted vampire blood from rogue alchemists?
I thought back to what I'd overheard at the compound. I did, actually. I was going to see if you could find anything on the laptop about it. I take it you did. Is Keith the one doing it again?
No,
said Marcus, turning the screen toward me.
Here's a list.
I read it. I see.
Yep, I bet the alchemists would be interested in that, and a number of other warrior and alchemist interactions that have been going on.
I agreed with him, but before I could respond, my phone rang, showing Adrian's number. Hang on, I answered, relief surging through me. Adrian, are you okay? He chuckled on the other end of the line.
Of course you'd ask that. You're the one who just went undercover with the warriors. Not me.
He paused.
You are back from that, right?
I am, and we got what we needed. Kind of. We have all sorts of details about where they're holding Jill, just not the actual geographical location. There was a long pause.
Well, I'll be damned,
he said.
That was about the only thing we got from Alicia. It's in St. George. But we couldn't get any other info from her about the setup. Not without, extra force. She insinuated that there might be some obstacles there.
St. George, I repeated. I wanted to sink to the ground in relief. That's it. The last piece. We've got the rest. The layout, whatever obstacles she meant. Now we've just got to get everyone mobilized. Only we've got 3 days to do it.
Why 3 days?
Because they plan on killing her then, just like they were planning with Sonya. It was an arrangement they had for holding her for Alicia while she played her game with me. More silence, but I could sense the shift in Adrian's tone.
3 days.
I knew how hard it had to be for him. The thought of her trapped and undergoing torture was eating me up, and I didn't have nearly the bond he did with her. We'll get her, I said. Don't worry. Now that we have all this, I'll make the alchemists help. You contact the guardians. See if Rose and Dimitri can organize that. And check on Declan while you're at it.
I have,
he interrupted.
Checked on Declan, I mean. I think I'm driving my mom crazy with all my calls. They're fine. But Sydney? I told Neil.
My mind was spinning with plans for Jill, so that news drew me up short. About Declan? What'd he say?
He's afraid to be around Declan. I mean, not afraid of Declan himself, but afraid that someone will string the truth about Declan's history together.
But he's his father, I said lamely. He has to be with him. Adrian sighed.
That's what I told him. But Neil keeps arguing that some spirit user might see they're related or that even a lay person might notice plain old physical resemblance and start asking questions. He says we can't show any sign that they have a connection or inspire anyone to do a genetic test. And he insists that that involves him keeping his distance. He offered to do everything in his power to help Declan otherwise. I swear I think he'd rob a bank if he needed to.
My head reeled. We'll talk him out of it. He's probably just in shock. Once he hears reason, he'll understand. We disconnected, and I hoped my words were true. It made my heart ache that Neil would want to make such a sacrifice. Even if, logically, I could understand what might make him think that way. But still, how could he deprive Declan of a father when he already had lost a mother?
And what would become of Declan then?
Those were troubling questions for later. For now, I had to get things in motion with the alchemists. I had Eddie drive me to the other side of Palm Springs, to a payphone at a remote gas station. Tracking cell phones wasn't easy, but it wasn't beyond the alchemists, and I wouldn't take any chances. Picking up the phone, I steeled myself to dial a number I hadn't called in a very long time, but still had memorized. I just hoped I'd get an answer.
"Stanton here,"
came the familiar voice.
"Hello, Stanton. This is Sydney of Oshkov."
Silence met me, possibly from astonishment or initiating a track on the call. Maybe both.
"Hello, Sydney,"
she said at last.
"Isn't this a pleasant surprise? I can't say I expected to hear from you."
"The pleasure's all yours, and I'm not repeating any of this, so listen closely. The Moroi need alchemist backup to rescue Jill Dragomir from the Warriors of Light. I'm sure you've heard this from Queen Vasilisa."
"Yes," she replied. "And I'm sure you've heard that our superiors have chosen not to participate, seeing as there's only been circumstantial proof the Warriors took the girl."
"Well, we've got evidence now, so you're going to convince them to participate," I said. "And if you do, I'll give you the names of four alchemists who are selling charmed Moroi blood to the Warriors to make more of those strength-enhancing tattoos. In fact, I'll give you two of those names now. Edward Hill and Callie DiMaggio. Go investigate them. You've got 1 hour, at which point I'll call again from another number, so don't bother sticking out this one. And then you're going to tell me about how you'll be sending that backup to St. George, Utah, within the next 24 hours to help the Moroi rescue Jill. If she's rescued safely, I'll give you the other names. Talk to you then." I hung up, and Eddie regarded me with awe.
"That was pretty badass, but do you actually think it'll work?"
I followed him back to the car, hoping my gamble would pay off. We drove to a different part of town, to a restaurant called Pies and Stuff that Adrian and I used to frequent. Eddie and I waited there, neither of us speaking much as we munched on pie, both of us lost in our own thoughts. I knew Eddie was consumed by Jill in the 3 days. I was too. But I was also worried about Declan and Neil. I would have loved to go to Clarence's to check on the baby, but as long as the alchemists were keeping watch there, I couldn't risk it. When the hour deadline was up, I bought a souvenir for Adrian for old time's sake, and then prepared to call Stanton again. Part of the reason I'd chosen Pies and Stuff was because they had a payphone in their parking lot.
"What'd you decide?" I asked when Stanton answered.
"We'll help you," she said grimly. "Your story checks out about those two. I've got a group going to St. George right now."
"Wow," I said, impressed in spite of myself. "You move fast. Do you know where to go in St. George?"
"We know about a warrior camp there. We're going to scout it out and assess if it matches what you know."
"I've got records all about it that I can have sent to you," I told her.
"The Guardians are also en route,"
she finished. "We've been in touch with them, and we'll be coordinating our efforts to strike together to get the girl out.
I expect it all to happen within the next day. I assume that's good enough for you?"
"That's good enough for you to get the last two names," I replied. It was hard to keep my cool, considering how relieved I was to hear action was being taken for Jill. The fact that this was all finally happening, and so quickly, was exhilarating. "But if you want the rest of the information I have, you're going to have to work for it."
There was a long pause. Then,
"What information would that be, exactly?"
"I have proof of other warrior and alchemist interactions. Deals you probably don't know about."
"Deals I hope you don't know about."
Stanton was a stickler for the rules, but I wanted to believe she was one of the better alchemists.
"I'll give you all that information, too, and I'll make sure the Moroi don't know the dirt."
"You force them to put an awful lot of faith in your help.
But I have a feeling they might not be so cooperative if they knew you've got people in the group working with the enemy."
"What do you want?"
was all she asked. That told me a couple of things. Most importantly, that she knew it was very possible there were traitors in her midst. Amnesty for everyone we released from re-education. And an end to re-education, period. There was a sharp intake of breath.
Impossible!
What's the point of re-education, Stanton? I demanded. Half the time it doesn't work. There were people who'd been in there for ages, and even if it seems to work, you never really trust those people anyway. Like Keith. You're always watching. If you want to help protect humans from evil, the real evil, Strigoi, then there must be a better use of your resources.
We can discuss this after we rescue Jill Dragomir, she said stiffly.
No, we're discussing it now. Amnesty for everyone, including Adrian and me. When this is over, I want to go off with him, wherever we want, and live a normal life. I don't want to see alchemists driving by or watching me in restaurants. I want to be left alone to pursue my own interests. In exchange, I will give you a copy of what I found on a very incriminating laptop owned by Master Angeletti of the Warriors. And I won't give a copy of that information to the Moroi, unless you violate the terms of this agreement. Glancing up, I saw Eddie studying some posters on the door of Pies and Stuff, and I was glad he was out of earshot. He probably wouldn't like the idea of me withholding something that might be of interest to his people, but right now I was negotiating for my life, and the lives of the other ex-alchemists. I couldn't favor the alchemists or the Moroi. I had to look out for everyone who'd simply been caught in the middle of their negotiations.
I'll be honest, said Stanton at last. Many questions have been raised internally about the usefulness of re-education, whether it's truly doing what we want. But I can't agree to your deal on my own. You should know that by now. I need to take it to the others. What I will promise you is amnesty for the rest of this endeavor in St. George. If you want to attend, you have my word you can without fear from the alchemists. Then I'll let you know what the others have to say.
Something in Stanton's voice, as well as what I knew of her character, made me believe her. Fair enough, I said. I tried to make my tone lofty, like I was doing her a great favor in making this concession. But in truth, I was anxious to get things underway. It was time for us to bring Jill home.
Chapter 18. Adrian. Just look at him, I insisted. Please. No, said Neil, turning away from the phone I held toward him. If I look at him... His voice choked, and he was unable to continue. We were still at Maud's house, waiting for the next phase of action, and I was trying to get him to overcome the crazy idea that he needed to avoid Declan. Look, I said. No one's going to think it's suspicious if you raise him. We all know you loved Olive. They'll think you're helping because of that, not because through some crazy twist of spirit you two managed to change the world as we know it. Neil shook his head. Hardly anyone even knows Olive had a baby. That's a good thing. You need to keep it that way, and keep me out of the picture. We'd been over this 100 times, and it was driving me crazy. If Neil had wanted to stay away from Declan, say, because he didn't like kids or was freaked out by fatherhood, I could have understood that more. But it was obvious Neil desperately wanted to see and be a part of Declan's life. I could hear the longing in his voice. We'll find a way, I said. I swear it. There was a haunted look on Neil's face. Declan is a miracle, he murmured, and he needs to be protected and given a normal life. A happy, normal life. I want that, too, I said wearily. Believe me, I do. Adrian? Maud's voice came through to where we were sitting on the back porch, enjoying the warm evening. You have some guests. In a flash, Neil and I were back inside, my heart racing. Sure enough, there was Sydney, standing in the living room and back to her normal appearance. I swept her into my arms, spinning her around so much that she laughed and told me to set her down before she got dizzy. I cupped her face in my hands. You're okay, I said happily. She gave me a teasing punch. You knew I was. A phone call is different from seeing, I said. I pressed a kiss to her forehead. I mean, I knew you were competent and brave and awesome, but, well, it's still not easy having your wife off risking her life with a bunch of vampire-hating freaks. I reached into my pocket. Oh, and don't forget this. I got down on my knees and slipped on her diamond and ruby rings, which I'd been holding on to while she was away. As promised. I mean, except for the naked part, but we can worry about that later. I expected a chastising, Adrian, but she smiled. Her face filled with love and happiness. She took my hands and helped me up, looking as though she might even kiss me, until she remembered we had an audience. Flustered, she stepped back and crossed her arms in an attempt to look professional. Eddie and Marcus looked amused by all of this. Neil, oddly, looked intrigued as he glanced back and forth between Sydney and me. "Time to get back to business," she said. "It's happening," said Eddie eagerly. "We're getting Jill back." "What's the plan?" I asked. Once I'd called and told Rose and Dimitri the information about Jill and the alchemists, I'd lost track of what was happening. I knew Sydney had been part of the strategizing, though. "The alchemists have confirmed that the place they knew about in St. George is the same as the one in the records we had on the laptop. So they and the Guardians are analyzing all the schematics to make sure they've got a solid course of action," Sydney explained. I felt a bit of smugness at that. Alicia had been so cocky that we wouldn't be prepared to go for Jill, but she hadn't counted on Sydney's sleuthing. I was proud of myself for holding back and truly turning on the spirit. In fact, I'd been very cautious of it the last couple of days, and amazingly, Aunt Tatiana had stayed mostly quiet. "We also currently have amnesty, so we can move around freely and go join them in St. George," Sydney said, nodding to me. "Not that you and I'll do much as far as action, but we can at least monitor things and be there when Jill's released. Neil, Eddie, and some of the others will be at the actual rescue." "I look forward to it," said Neil, a dangerous edge in his voice. Eddie's fierce expression answered for him. "We'll all get more details once we're in St. George," continued Sydney. "We can hit the road as soon as everyone's ready. It's about a 6-hour drive, and we should end up there right about the time the raid is scheduled to happen."
"I'm ready to go any time," said Neil.
"Me too," I said. "Just give me 2 minutes to gather my things." Sydney followed me to Maud's guest room and watched as I shoved my spare clothes and laptop into the tote bag I'd been hauling around on this adventure. "Rose called me," she said, shutting the door. "She and Dimitri wanted to see if it was okay for them to go to St. George, leaving your mom and Declan at Clarence's. I told them it was. I hope that's all right." I paused, momentarily alarmed, then gave a slow nod. "Yeah, I think so. The alchemists will have given up watching your hangouts now that they know where you're headed. And really, as long as no one's looking for Declan..."
"That's what I thought, too," agreed Sydney. "Though I could tell Rose was dying to know why we've been so secretive about him."
I slung my bag over my shoulder and put my free arm around her, noticing that she had a small bag tucked in the crook of her elbow. "I think we should tell them when this is over, and once we've figured things out with Neil. They're trustworthy, and they deserve to know. You know what it means for them."
"I do. Plus, whatever we end up doing to help Declan and Neil, well, I think we're going to need a few allies. They're good ones to have. I don't suppose Neil's changed his mind?"
"No," I said in exasperation. "He still keeps wanting to take the moral high ground, saying it's best for Declan."
"We'll talk him out of it," she said. "Once this is all over and Jill's back."
"Once Jill's back," I reiterated. The floodgate holding back all the emotions I felt about Jill threatened to burst. God, I can't believe we're so close. It's been so long, and I've been so worried about her. Sydney squeezed my hand.
"I know, I know.
And we're almost there." I wanted to rip Alicia apart, I admitted, for what she'd done. I wanted to pulverize her with spirit.
"You didn't, did you?"
asked Sydney, her eyes widening. I exhaled. "No. I wanted to, but no. I kept it in check. I only used as much spirit as I needed, and I've been keeping it under control ever since." The smile that lit Sydney's features warmed me all over.
"I'm so proud of you, Adrian. I know it can't be easy."
"It's not,"
I admitted. But I'm trying, and I think I can do it. I think I can control myself. I don't need the meds. I can just hold back on spirit. Her smile faltered like she might disagree, but then she surprised me by saying, I'll support you and be there for you, whatever you choose to do, for the rest of our lives. She handed me the bag under her arm. I got you a gift. Well, it's kind of for both of us. I opened it up and found a coffee mug from Pies and Stuff. Oh, man, I can't believe you went without me, I teased. This is for us, she said. The first thing to put in our new home together. I'm working out something with Stanton to buy our freedom. When this is all over, we're going to have a life together, Adrian. A real one. Love for her threatened to overwhelm me. I set down all my bags and drew her into my arms. That silly mug suddenly took on monumental significance, and looking down at her, at the face I loved so much, I could see the future she described. A future together where we could accomplish anything. Going back on meds seemed a small price for that. I didn't need spirit, so long as I had Sydney. I pressed her gently against the door and kissed her, allowing myself to briefly forget everything waiting for us outside this room. For now, there was just the two of us, and this one perfect moment of togetherness. You make me believe anything is possible, I whispered. I told you before, we're the center, she said, and the center will hold. I kissed her again, more deeply, and it was with great reluctance that we finally had to draw apart again. I'm all for a real home, I said, brushing hair from her face. But before that, can we please have a real honeymoon? Gladly, she murmured, kissing me one more time. As soon as we have Jill, everything's going to change. I held her tightly. Then, by God, let's go get Jill. The four of us hit the road to St. George, driving overnight to get there in time. We tried to take turns and get rest, but it was hard. Honestly, by this point, I felt like schedules and daytime hours were just suggestions in my life. I was happy to be with Sydney again, and she and I found ourselves catching up on what we'd missed during our time apart. She wouldn't elaborate on what deal she was attempting with Stanton, but she spoke confidently about that future home we both wanted so much. We made good time, arriving at the Alchemists and Guardians' makeshift command center just before dawn. And as much as I hated to admit it, the Alchemists proved useful. In less than a day, they'd found a vacant office building and filled it with alchemists and computers. They had cameras and satellite info on the Warrior's compound, as well as scouts already in place on site, reporting back with information on the Warrior's state of affairs and security measures. A gruff guy named McLean was in charge of the alchemist's soldiers, and he and Dimitri, who'd gotten there a few hours ago, were working surprisingly well together organizing the attack. Everyone assured us it would be simple, relatively speaking. Our forces outnumbered the Warriors. If the initial raid came on strong, without warning, there should be no reason we wouldn't triumph. Sydney and I exchanged uneasy glances, knowing things were rarely as easy as they seemed, but we tried to be optimistic. We hoped this would be simple. We needed it to be, and we sent Dimitri, Rose, Eddie, and Neil off in high spirits, leaving us nothing to do but wait around for updates. It felt strange for me, though, not to be out there. I'd spent so much of the last month worried for Jill but unable to act while trapped at court. Then, when we'd gotten our lead on Alicia, I'd had to stay behind at first in order to cover for Sydney. Now, finally, we knew where Jill was, and I was staying behind again. It was maddening. Ever since I'd brought Jill back from the assassination attempt, I'd felt as though her life were in my hands. Even though I knew a compound of armed fanatics was best breached by trained guardians and alchemists, I couldn't shake the feeling I should be out there. It's okay, Sydney said gently, coming to rest a hand on my arm. I feel useless too, but they're the experts, and once they get her out, we'll be among the first to see her. I know, I said. I slipped an arm around her. Patience just isn't always one of my better traits. As I was speaking, Sydney's gaze wandered to something behind me, and I turned to look. It was her father and Zoe, entering the command center. They too froze for a moment, and then Zoe took a few steps forward, her face breaking into a smile, until a sharp rebuke from her father drew her up short. Zoe! He barked. My own sister can't come see me, Dad? Sydney asked,
Afraid I'll taint her?
He flushed. I heard you cut some kind of deal with Stanton. It wouldn't have happened if I were in charge.
How are you, Zoe? Sydney asked, directing her attention to the youngest sage sister. You okay?
Zoe cast an uncertain look at her father and then gave a slow nod.
Yeah. You?
Come along, ordered their father. Let's see how this operation is progressing.
Zoe gave Sydney one last glance and then reluctantly followed Jared Sage to where some alchemists were monitoring communications from the team raiding the warrior's compound. Sydney broke from me and went after them. I want an update too, she said. But when she reached the group huddled around the two people in charge of communications, Sydney waited until her father was distracted, asking someone a question. She touched Zoe's sleeve and gently drew her back a few steps toward us. I never thanked you for not reporting me back in the Ozarks, said Sydney softly. Zoe shook her head but kept an anxious eye on their dad.
It's the least I could do. Sydney, if I'd had any idea what you had to go through there, I never would have turned you in. I thought they were going to help you. Honestly.
Tears brimmed in her eyes.
How do you know what happened there? I asked.
Last I knew, the full details of what detainees in re-education endured wasn't widely known. Zoe didn't answer right away, and from the uneasy way she regarded me, it was clear she hadn't quite come to terms with a vampire brother-in-law.
Carly told me, she said at last. She heard it from some guy who helped you out. I think she's dating him?
Sydney and I exchanged surprised looks.
Marcus?
We asked in unison.
Yeah,
said Zoe.
I think that's his name.
That sly dog,
I muttered. It had been apparent when he and Carly met that he had a crush on Sydney's older sister, but I'd had no idea he'd pursued her.
I'm glad you're talking to Carly, said Sydney. Do you ever talk to Mom?
Zoe shook her head.
No. I wish I could, but Dad won't let me. And he made sure the terms of the divorce were pretty absolute.
There was a misery in her voice that both Sydney and I picked up on.
Do you want out? Sydney asked urgently. Do you want to be free of them? Not yet, said Zoe.
Seeing Sydney's skeptical look, she continued.
No, I'm serious. That's not fear talking. I still believe in the cause, but I'm not always happy about some of the methods. That doesn't mean I'm ready to give up. I want to keep learning and working with them. And then, who knows?
Her face fell a little.
I wouldn't mind seeing Mom again, though.
Zoe! Thundered Jared. He'd just noticed her talking to us. Get over here and...
I'm getting a report in,
exclaimed the alchemist on communication. She was sitting beside a guardian who was sharing the monitoring duty. They were both in headphones, with laptops in front of them, and he gave a nod of agreement.
Both teams are in, but there are apparently mines on the property.
Sydney clenched my hand, and a terrible silence descended on all of us as we waited for more. Alicia's face came to mind, taunting that we'd never get through to Jill.
Mines have been bypassed, the guardian said several minutes later.
We all exhaled in relief, only to tense up once more.
They're engaging the enemy combatants now.
Even with the headphones dampening, I could hear the crackle of urgent dispatches from those raiding the compound, as well as what sounded like gunshots. Sydney leaned against me again, one of her hands resting on the little wooden cross necklace I'd painted for her long ago. Minutes felt like hours, and through it all, I just kept thinking, I should be there. I should be there.
Why?
Sneered Aunt Tatiana.
What good would you be without spirit? Your wife wouldn't let you use it there, remember?
A grin suddenly broke over the guardian's face as he listened to the latest message.
They're in. The upper levels of the compound have been seized. All combatants detained.
He paused as more information came in.
No casualties on our side.
In a surprising moment of solidarity, he and the alchemist high-fived, but I couldn't share their joy. Not yet.
Do they have Jill?
I demanded.
Do they have the princess yet?
The guardian shook his head.
They're going for her now. She's being held in the basement, but they did some heat sensing, and there's only one person there. All evidence points to a Maroi of her size.
I drew Sydney to me in a crushing embrace, burying my face against her hair.
It's over. It's finally over. I wasn't one for tears, but I felt them coming to my eyes at the thought I'd soon be reunited with Jill.